Welcome to Going Beyond Medicine with Elaine Grohman. Conversations with people who are working to make a difference in our world. Now here's your host for Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio, Elaine Grohman.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Elaine Grohman, and on Going Beyond Medicine, our goal is to help to bring people to the airways that are making a difference in our world. And as we have seen throughout the past, most certainly the past few years, an awareness of the challenges that we have with human trafficking and various things of that nature that are destroying the fabric of our society. And so today, my guest today is Laura Swanson, who is a director and producer of a documentary film called Break the Chain. And she has a wealth of information to share with us, and I want to get right to the conversation. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Please tell me about your experiences that brought you to create the documentary Break the Chain and what we need to know, in particular in Michigan, since you are from Michigan and this documentary, if I'm not mistaken, focuses primarily on Michigan. Is that correct?
So we basically did Michigan as a way to just kind of show people what's happening in our backyards. It's applicable to the United States. So there's not anything that makes it necessarily specific about exactly what's happening here in Michigan. It was more of a way to give, to provide like an example of a state and the directors doing something in their backyard.
Well, thank you for that. And what brought you to the awareness of the need to focus on human trafficking and the incredible epidemic that it is?
Mm-hmm. I have a background in working with victims of sexual assault and domestic violence. I myself am a rape survivor. And so I, after working in that field for quite a long time, I kind of recognized that the media in a lot of cases wasn't accurately portraying issues of sexual and domestic violence. It was very sensationalized, very exploitive, and only the most extreme cases or the cases where it was super easy to empathize with the victim were being sold and shown and educated shown to the masses and what we were basing our education off of. Mm. And so I really decided that I wanted to try and do a documentary of all the different survivors and the problem of how people aren't understanding how sexual assault and domestic violence actually happens. And so I switched into documentary film and made my first doc on that issue of sexual assault on college campuses and off college campuses. While I was touring with that film, I ended up seeing more stuff about human trafficking within the Lansing area in Michigan, where I was residing at the time. And my first thought was, what is this? Because my idea of human trafficking had obviously been what a lot of people's have been, which is it's something that occurs in other countries. It's something that involves foreign people. It's something that is having people chained up in the basement. It's mainly kidnapping. I wasn't even thinking about labor trafficking at the time. And so it piqued my interest. And I thought, you know, human trafficking victims might be similar to sexual assault victims and everything that I've been working on for so long. And when I reached out to the director of the Michigan Human Trafficking Task Force, she let me know over a span of like 3 hours that it was very, very similar to sexual assault and domestic violence and how people have a lot of misconceptions, misinformation about it going on. And there needs to be a lot more media and coverage that's accurately portraying the victims and including labor trafficking so that we can actually get some work done and awareness done and we can see more victims come to light and produce laws that actually accurately help victims.
Thank you for your awareness, Laura, and for what you have done and what you're continuing to do. And can you please help us to begin to understand what are some of these misconceptions? What are some of the things that we have been misled or misinformed about so that we can be more fully aware of what's going on?
Yeah, so there are a ton of myths and misconceptions around human trafficking. So, I mean, the first one is obviously that human trafficking involves kidnapping. And it's usually from some sort of like public face or being snatched out of their beds at night. And while kidnapping situations can occur within human trafficking, they don't make up the majority of the cases that all the people in law enforcement and the nonprofits see on a daily basis. Most of the victims are actually not taken without warning in public. You know, a lot of times you actually see individuals walk into it because their traffickers are their boyfriends, their traffickers are their family members. It's a lot of complicated relationships in it where it's not just so black and white. So I think that's one of the main things that's difficult for people to get their head around is how does an individual walk in willingly to a situation of being trafficked? And it's not that they're willing and wanting to be trafficked, it's that they've been tricked in some form or another into thinking that they're in a relationship with someone or that this person's going to provide them adequate work or adequate shelter, and then it becomes this form of manipulation that we see in domestic violence, and that applies to labor and sex trafficking.
So based on what you're saying then, Laura, and again, my guest is Laura Swanson, who is the director and producer of Break the Chain, which is a documentary, award-winning documentary about human trafficking. And so it is based on what you're saying, Laura, it sounds like there's individuals clearly who are groomed to be traffickers and groomed to be someone who would elicit some kind of emotional response from somebody or to kind of entice them into believing that they're they have their best interest in mind or a love interest or whatever it happens to be. And is that correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Those individuals, traffickers are very smart, very manipulative. And so they're looking for individuals who may come from a poor home environment, may not have very much money, may be looking for some sort of attention. And those traffickers see that in that individual and play the part that that individual needs for them to a certain period of time. And then they say, I need you to work for like $3 an hour doing this, or I need you to start selling your body because we need to make more money. But like, I love you. It's a very complex situation.
Mm. And so as people are being trained, if I could use that term, to be the groomers that are grooming people, how are they brought into it? I mean, we always look into this incredible challenge of the human victims that are being trafficked, but the psychological distortion of someone who is willing to do that to another human being, we often, I think, don't look at. You know, what is it that would make someone be willing to do something like this to another human being?
Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of us are looking into more. That obviously piques my interest. There's not necessarily one defined stereotype of a trafficker. Anyone can be a trafficker. Mm-hmm. You find mm-hmm. people who, for instance, in the sex trafficking survivor in our film, Debbie, her trafficker started when he was 16 years old.
Oh,
so most people would think you would be a lot older. It'd be like a 40-year-old man or something like that. And that wasn't the case. 16 years old. And this kid just wanted to make some money and found a good way of hustling women and girlfriends and creating this type of environment. Then you have people that are corporations. For us, when you look in terms of labor trafficking, you really have to look at yourself and the products that you buy and our businesses needing cheap labor so badly so that we can get our prices down so low so that they make deals with foreign entities that do not have human interest, you know, as their number one and are having forced child slave labor in their supply chains. And sometimes you can even see traffickers who, when you look into cases of, you know, sexual assault or pedophilia, you know, traffickers sometimes themselves are just utilizing their own survival skills and they were abused in their past and came from a poorer environment as well. I mean, it's just a rundown of a whole bunch of different factors that kind of come together to bring these types of people into play where it's easiest for them and most beneficial for them to essentially use a human being as a commodity and reuse them to exploit them for money.
Yeah. As you're saying, this is just this vicious circle of money, a vicious circle of wanting money, not having money, the greed for money, the lack of understanding of a human value and human worth. So I'm sure that you have just, I can't even imagine what you have seen and how it's just shocked you into a different kind of awareness about what is so fundamentally broken in our human experience. And can you tell us a little bit about how, and I know that your very powerful movie, Break the Chain, is really heavily centered on the victims themselves. Can you speak a little bit about the individuals in the film? I don't want to give anything away. I want it to come from your mouth so that you can tell us exactly what it was like for them. What was it like for them to have had these experiences, and how were they enticed into it?
Yeah, so I think definitely right as we were just talking about the different background environments that kind of create this susceptibility into the trafficking world, that was very much what it was like for our two trafficking survivors. We had a sex trafficking survivor and a labor trafficking survivor. Did that mainly because wanted to create equality in spreading awareness for both of them, because oftentimes the lion's share of attention goes to sex trafficking. So Debbie is the sex trafficking survivor, Kwame is the labor trafficking survivor, and both of them came from environments where they didn't have much and they were looking for something. So in terms of Debbie, she came from an abusive home environment and she ran away and she was homeless and someone approached her. And so when someone approached her and told her she was amazing and they wanted to take care of her, what do you do when you're 12 years old and your home is so bad and this person's giving you all these ideas? You don't know any better. So obviously that looks like the better situation. So she went with this guy, considered him her like boyfriend and stuff until it turned into a huge trafficking situation. In terms of Kwame, he was from Togo, Africa. And so that was a war-torn country, and they didn't have education there. So a family friend of his parents actually said, hey, I'll take him over to the United States and give him a better life and give him education. That sounds amazing. So he came to the United States, didn't realize that his trafficker had falsified documents, falsified his age, basically lied to get asylum into our country. And then he ended up going to public school. But the catch was he basically made Kwame and a few other children that this guy had brought over with him, mainly had them doing domestic work for him, not paying them, just making them like clean cars, do stuff for his friends' cars. And if they wouldn't do all this domestic work, he would use violence against them or starve them and stuff. And this actually was happening in the public eye. He was going to school for 6 years before anybody noticed that there might be a problem with him or this guy that was his trafficker, because his trafficker was seen as a very church-going man that was doing amazing things for these children, and it wasn't the case. So those are kind of a little bit about their story. And where they come from and how they got into it.
Well, thank you for sharing that with me, Laura. And again, my guest is Laura Swanson, the director and producer of Break the Chain. And every time, you know, Laura, I just have to say, every time I hear people use the term boyfriend or friend, you know, it has nothing to do with friendship. We so fundamentally have to help children and individuals understand what is a real friend. You know, what does that mean? When you have someone who is a friend or someone who is just an acquaintance or someone that you happen to know, so that there's not this muddied waters of, you know, what does a friend do? You know, so that there's such a misconception, you know, when someone is in already a domestic violence situation or an unhealthy family situation, that they don't know what an actual friend is.
I agree. I think there's a big disconnect, especially in our education, our schools and stuff, around what we're willing to teach and what we think is important to teach. And, you know, we teach, you know, sex ed, but we don't teach necessarily all about sexual abuse and how that can lead to human trafficking and what healthy sexual and healthy romantic relationships are and everything. And I think that's part of the problem, is that, you end up having to learn after being abused what's healthy and what's not healthy, instead of having a little bit more of a foundation from the get-go.
Yes. And, you know, is there anything, and I so appreciate the fact that your movie, Break the Chain, is being seen in university classrooms around the United States at international film festivals, that state Supreme Courts are currently using it to train law enforcement, et cetera, and nonprofit organizations. But where is it also being seen and used as education for people that are in, let's say, healthcare, in the actual teachers from literally from preschool to college to university? You know, that this can happen at any time. And if we're people that have eyes on individuals every day and they're not seeing it and they're not recognizing it, how do we change that?
Yes. So, that's not something that's mentioned in there, but we have worked with high schools, middle schools, different teachers, different healthcare professionals. I think a lot of times in healthcare, they need documentaries that are specifically tied to healthcare and exactly how to help patients. So we don't get into healthcare too much anymore. When it comes to public schools and teachers, that's been a really, really hard one. And it's not just for us. As I've traveled the United States the past year and a half with this film, every single time I run into other nonprofits and people trying to show things and spread that awareness in public schools and for teachers, they come up against, like, no. It's just always, most of the time, it's no. Like, students aren't ready to learn this. They don't need to know this.
What's their rationale? What's their rationale?
I think that everybody just thinks it's not happening in their area, and everybody thinks they have a good understanding of their community when it's absolutely not true. It's the same thing when you look at, you know, how sometimes parents can be naive when it's their children and not see necessarily that their children are having sex at 14 years old and don't want to recognize that and don't want to see it. It's almost a little bit of a denial. And then there's the worrisome about parents. So, you know, the school is always worried about what they show to their students or what they know or anything like that, and getting back to the parents and the parents being very angry with the school, or having to go through all this red tape to be able to get something approved, or the fact that you're giving them this information means that now they're more susceptible to doing these sexual acts or to go out and traffic themselves or something. Like it's almost a protective thing, when really, honestly, it should just be about, if we can give kids and teachers and everybody the most awareness as possible and education as possible, it really will help in preventing these things or being able to see these things a little bit better when they do happen, because they are happening and they're not going to stop happening.
Yeah. And the thing that really kind of struck me as you were just saying that, Laura, is, you know, we need to have a reevaluation of maybe good peer pressure instead of bad peer pressure. I mean, like, ask somebody, why would you not be willing to educate your child about this? Why would you not be asking your employer or your healthcare worker or your minister or your priest, why are you not willing to look at this incredible challenge? That fundamentally, if we don't respect the lives of our young children and young adults, then who are we?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think this is incredibly needed, especially in the reevaluation of everything, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, can you tell me, what was the thing that surprised you most, Laura, when you were in the process of putting together this film, in terms of those that were willing to help you, those that maybe were a little abrasive about what you were trying to do, and those that were the victims themselves? What was the thing that surprised you the most?
This one's difficult. I would say that honestly, I didn't necessarily understand how political and controversial this subject was getting into it, because I feel like, coming from the outside where I hadn't worked for years in human trafficking, like I had sexual assault and domestic violence, in my head I assumed everybody's kind of on the same team, wanting the same thing and helping each other. And as I got into it, I realized there's all this controversy over how we help victims, what we do for perpetrators, how do we tackle the Johns or the people who solicit sex. And then when you look at the labor trafficking side, just how much doesn't get done because it's so wrapped up in our economic growth in America that people don't want to start doing things about it because it's going to raise the price of everything that we have to buy and purchase. And so it became this world of, you know, if I went to go interview someone, sometimes they would say, well, who else are you interviewing? Are you interviewing this individual from another nonprofit? Because if you are, I don't want to be involved in your film. And I was thinking, what is happening? I thought everybody's on the same team working for the same thing, but there was much more going on, much more debate. And I just, that surprised me the most about this issue, because I thought it was going to be kind of a heart-wrenching issue where everybody was wanting to work well together and do the same thing. And that wasn't true.
You know, thank you for sharing that really kind of shocking thing. And as you're speaking, I literally looked up the word political. And the definition is relating to the government or the public affairs of a country. And then underneath that, it says a period of political and economic stability. What we need to understand is if we don't have our affairs in order and we are not literally standing up for what is good, we have no stability. That is the big thing that I think that people often are afraid of recognizing their impotence, literally, in terms of what they're willing to do to make things better instead of thinking mm-hmm. that it's just about their own personal gain.
Right, right. And as much as there's a lot of great people doing great things out there, sometimes they're under the guise of doing great things and they're not necessarily out there doing them wholeheartedly for the causes that they're about. And it can be about gaining that money, gaining that attention for things. And I kind of opened up my eyes that's happening within the realm of this type of work as well.
The thing that always shocks me in the different people that I know that Edie Franklin is in your movie, and I've had the opportunity to have Edie on the show. And I, you know, just, it's so shocking to me how individuals are, they shy away from their greatest weakness instead of really walking towards the weaknesses that we have and strengthening our strengths instead of contributing to our weaknesses, you know? Mm-hmm. So, this always comes to my mind is like, why aren't we starting with those organizations and hold their feet to the fire that are supposedly doing good things? And I mean by that churches, synagogues, religious organizations that we already know, and particularly in the Catholic Church, have a terrible track record.
Yeah.
But why aren't we holding their feet to the fire and saying, why aren't you, you know, preaching this literally from your pulpit, that if you're not taking care of someone else's safety, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, then you're not doing your job, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
It's every time I couldn't wait to talk to you, Laura. I mean, there's just so much that we need to learn to do, and I'm going to help you in any way I can. So,
thank you.
So please also tell me, most people don't realize that part of human trafficking, and it's kind of a gruesome thing to talk about, is also organ procurement.
Oh, yeah. Organ trafficking.
Yes.
That's kind of a different, it's part of it, but it's kind of a different sect. For how we define human trafficking right now, it's definitely mainly focused on sex and labor and forced marriage. Mm-hmm. But there is the whole other section, which I have never gotten into, which is the organ trafficking that I know is a big thing. And I am actually the co-director for Break the Chain, has worked on another film in India, I believe, about organ trafficking out there as well.
Mm, okay. So what is another use? You were talking about the misconceptions that people think that individuals are trafficked in terms of being kidnapped. They don't know that they're often groomed by somebody within their schools. Is there any kind of task force or any kind of things that are working with the Michigan human trafficking task force that are trying to, for lack of a better way to say it, embed in school systems people that are trained to observe this stuff? You know, trained that like a school might have a social worker, a school might have security officer, do they have someone who could be literally on the ground watching, observing, knowing what these signs are and helping to intercede?
I don't know about security officers or anything like that, but I do know that the task force has been working for quite a while on making training of human trafficking and recognizing the signs of it be something that all teachers and principals and people working on the school grounds have an understanding of. So I know that's been going on, but also, again, there's pushback. And I think part of that's, you know, believing that, like I said before, that it doesn't really happen or they don't need to worry about that in their school system.
Okay.
And also just getting into the schools and all the red tape that happens there.
Okay. Laura, we have to take a real quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk to you about different ways that you have learned or seen maybe that are literally breaking the chain. Please stay with us. This is Elaine Grohman for Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio. And we're going to resume in a few minutes with my guest, Laura Swanson. Thank you.
You're listening to Empower Radio, an entire radio station devoted to your personal development, expanding your conscious awareness, and empowering positive change. Meet our hosts and listen online at EmpowerRadio.com, on iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Stitcher Radio, or iTunes, or download the Empower Radio app for your smartphone or tablet. It's free in the App Store, and it lets you listen to our shows and podcasts on demand. Empowering people, empowering change. Empower Radio, online at EmpowerRadio.com.
Dave, what are you doing?
Just sending a gift to Dave 2037.
Who?
Me in the future. I save a little money from every paycheck as a gift to Dave 2037, so he can spend it on things like anti-gravity boots or a hologram Doberman, something cool like that. I think Dave 2037 deserves it. He worked hard. What are you getting Steve 2037?
I guess I was thinking Steve 2037 would just fend for himself.
Well, all right, but don't expect to be borrowing my anti-gravity boots.
You want to have money in your future? You got to start saving now. Putting some money from every paycheck into a savings account or contributing to your 401k can make a big difference later. Put away a few bucks, feel like $1 million. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's feedthepig.org.
Hey, let's just hope Steve 2037 doesn't get his hands on a cold time machine, because he is going to come back here and knock some sense into you.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Wildfires burn millions of acres each year. And each year, wildland firefighters like Fire Chief James Hall battle to contain them. But they can't do it alone.
A single ember that escapes from a wildfire can travel more than a mile. It can ignite and destroy your home, your community, or more. That single ember can be just as dangerous as the wildfire itself. But you can do something firefighters can't. You can act now to prepare your home and your community for wildfire. You can reduce the risk. Do your part. Go to fireadapted.org.
Get fire adapted. Learn what you can do now to reduce wildfire damage later at fireadapted.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council. Learn more at fireadapted.org.
Would your business survive a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency, and 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now, before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
Empower your life. Empower Radio.
Now back to Elaine Grohman and Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Welcome back to the show. This is Elaine Grohman, and my guest today is Laura Swanson, who is a documentary filmmaker, professional speaker, sexual assault survivor, and advocate. And she works to help to bring awareness to human rights and currently is working primarily on trying to help people understand the huge challenge that we have globally in human trafficking. So thank you and welcome back to the show, Laura.
Thank you.
Laura, is there a place that anyone can view your documentary, Break the Chain?
So right now we do not have it up online to view, but if you go to our website, breakthechainfilm.com, you can see the trailer. And then if you look into the screenings part of our website, you can see where screenings will be coming up in your area, or you can go and put in an application to screen. So, you know, we have a copyright licensing fee for public community event screenings, but in terms of if you want to screen it at your home, if you want to look at it online, if you want to do it as part of a small training, anything, I just tell people, just email me, just do that screening application. We will talk. We will create something that works for your budget or seems fair.
That sounds great. I have two organizations that I work with that I would love to bring it to both of them. And I think that it's so important because it focuses so much on educating kids because, you know, our sweet children are just learning about relationships. And, you know, it's so easy in naivety to not understand, especially if you have had any, you know, and it's not to assume that everyone that is involved as a victim of human trafficking comes from a bad home. They may not, you know, they may come from, you know, just any kind of home. In fact, I remember Teresa Flores, I interviewed her and she came from, a, you know, a stable home, you know. But of course, there are so many variables. So we have a lot of misnomers. You know, everyone is vulnerable. Everyone is looking for love. Everyone is looking to be included. Everyone is looking to be valued. And unfortunately, it's that part of our human nature that is being misused.
So
people can come to view it or they can contact you again. Laura Swanson has mentioned it's www.breakthechainfilm.com. Is it .com or .org?
.com.
Okay, breakthechain.com. So that if you want to bring it to your church, if you want to bring it to your community center, wherever you can, it would certainly help to bring more additional awareness wherever we can bring it. So this is your second film. What was your first film, Laura?
My first film was called Every 2 Minutes, and it was about sexual assault. It was essentially kind of doing a similar thing to Break the Chain. It was just a little bit more novice for me at the time because it was my first time doing anything in film. But it had 17 survivors of sexual assault in it, 3 men, 14 women. And it basically showed how all of their experiences, even though everyone's story is different, it had similar themes, such as people not being believed, it happening by someone that they knew, stuff like that. So it was the same kind of thing that I wanted to do with Break the Chain. I wanted to break the myths and misconceptions around sexual assault and actually get people to understand and empathize with victims that you mostly see versus the raped in an alley by a stranger victims that, you know, has been taught to us for a long period of time in this country as what it is.
So I'm looking at your website right now, breakthechainfilm.org. And Laura, there are, as you had mentioned, people can take a look at the trailer, but also there is a way for people to make a donation to assist you in what you're trying to do. Can you tell us about what the donation's going to and how that is effective for you and helpful to you?
Yes. So this film is very, very interesting in the way that it was made. A lot of films get grants or, you know, apply for film scholarships or have funders. And honestly, what happened with us is that we had no funding to start with at all. And the majority of the film was created based on volunteer work. And I have volunteered my time for 3 years in making this film without being paid.
So
we are a completely independent nonprofit project. So when people, we rely on donations from people to be able to keep our website up and running, be able to create the flyers that we need to send to high schools, all of that stuff, having our dues for even just like Adobe Cloud to be able to access our design materials. that's actually what it comes down to for us. It doesn't go directly to victims or anything. It's just to help us be able to maintain our project, because we, when we attempted to apply for funding, we actually got shut down quite a bit and turned away. And I made the decision to just go ahead with it and invest my time in doing it anyways. And I'm really glad I did, because after we actually released it, it got a lot of recognition and was in festivals, and we've been able to tour with it and do a lot of stuff. And I always laugh because we only had $12,000 that we were able to come up with to be able to do the production of this film. And when I put it all out, I actually had to do a conference the other week and tell them, they wanted to know, like, what is the actual cost of the film? And when I tracked everything from my time to everybody's time that volunteered, all the things that we got, it was actually $254,000, which is actually normal for a documentary film, and actually was the same amount of the films when we were touring with and the things that we would apply after we did the film and get accepted into. The other films would be between the 150 and 400,000 range. And I'm laughing because I'm just like, we only had $12,000, but made it.
You know, that's congratulations. Yeah. That's amazing. And in fact, the question I was going to ask you, Laura, is, and again, my guest is Laura Swanson, the producer and director of Break the Chain, a documentary about human trafficking. What is, you know, often it's a challenge to talk about money, but, you know, you need money to do these things, and you need money to travel, to be able to, you know, give these presentations. What is a dollar amount that you really actually physically need in order to have, let's say, a yearly budget? You know, because I believe in, if you don't tell people what you need, they don't know what to give, you know. Mm-hmm. So you never know who's going to be listening to this. So if you need $500,000 to do what you need to do and to create more opportunities to help people, to educate people, is there a dollar amount that you can kind of come up with so that we could just put it out there in the ethers?
Yeah, the minimum that it would take for us to really be able to do the strong work and the education and the stuff that I would really love for us to be able to do would be $60,000. Like a year would be what it would take to be able to pay for everything, pay for everyone, not have to rely on volunteer this and that, and be able to actually go out and visit more places. Because what ends up happening is there's so many places that I would really love to go and visit and do work for and share the film with. But if they aren't able to pay something or pay for me to go out there, I'm not able to do it because, you know, 3 years of not making any money, as any adult would imagine, is not something that you can sustain.
Right. So as I'm looking at the partner page on your website, breakthechainfilm.org, or excuse me, .com, pardon me, breakthechainfilm.com, you have a lot of different individuals that are, or groups that are trying to help. So you have the Michigan Human Trafficking Task Force, obviously Crossroads Church and Ministries, Michigan State University Counseling Centers, and, you know, the list goes on and on. But are you working with people that are literally in the beginning stages of understanding social need, let's say social workers who are often brought in a challenging time? Are you working with students and or that kind of thing, as like with your U of M or Michigan State, rather?
Yeah, we don't have a direct connection where we're, you know, necessarily have like a project that we're working on with U of M or MSU, but MSU and U of M and those places do hold screenings, do hold trainings. The National Association of Social Workers Michigan chapter does trainings for the whatever they're like the continuing education credits for their social workers, their up and coming social workers. So people are being trained and educated with that. There's just not a specific project or something linked to it. It's mainly just using the film for other people's trainings. It's like a backup. So if they go in, they get to show people what, you know, human trafficking looks like and provide some sort of entertainment resources before they get into the PowerPoint part of things, so that it's not just, you know, a PowerPoint and just talking to people. They have something to back it up and show people.
Good. Good. You know, and as again, as I'm reading about the film on your website, you know, it's so you used the term earlier that, you know, there's a lot of sensationalism in terms of how the media has portrayed things and almost has desensitized us to the reality of it and making it more about, you know, this is there's a, you know, a girl gets saved in the end or a boy gets saved in the end. And it's not necessarily that. What are the statistics, if you can share that with us, the number of people that are currently victims of human trafficking or who are potential victims?
I actually can't share with you statistics. And this is actually a big part of our platform as well. And something that I took a lot away from the Michigan Human Trafficking Task Force and its director, Jane White, is that, unfortunately, we are just still, after, you know, 5 years of like really having a huge revolution around human trafficking, we are still at the beginning stages of spreading awareness. And mm-hmm. So the data, the research that we have, we know is either unreliable or incredibly underreported. So the statistics, even if you go on Polaris or the National Human Trafficking Hotline, they always warn, you know, these statistics aren't necessarily accurate, are kind of might be skewed in a way. We really need to step up our training and awareness to be able to uncover the victims and be able to understand their stories and recognize how it's happening to be able to provide for better statistics in the future. So there's not really any good solid statistics out there that everyone can look at and be like, oh yeah, that's absolutely certain. What we can say is these statistics that are out there, there are more victims than is reported. And I don't think that human trafficking is necessarily a huge thing that's on the rise. Like, it's obviously a booming business, but I think we also have to look at things like, if there's more training and education and awareness and we're uncovering more victims, then it's going to look like there's more things on the rise. But is it really on the rise, or are we just finding things that have been there all along?
Yes. And, you know, because if you look back historically, you know, literally centuries, mm-hmm. you know, we've always had slaves. You know, we've always had this mentality that there are the haves and the have-nots, the ones that have value and those that seemingly don't have value. So it's a fundamental shift that has to happen in how we view ourselves as one species. You know, that this hierarchical false strata that has been put into place is been so much a part of the human psyche, and we actually glorify it when we talk about like the building of the pyramids and, you know, all these different things. We're slaves, and in the United States history, you know, we have to understand this is fundamentally so wrong. And, you know, what if we actually paid someone adequately to do exactly what they've been, you know, forced to do, wouldn't there be so much more cohesion? Of course there would.
Yeah.
Of course there would. So what are the projects? Are you working on anything as, I hate to put any pressure on you, but are you doing anything to help to now begin to address some of these challenges to help people understand what they can do?
Yeah. So my main thing is spreading the word about the film and connecting with other organizations. One new organization that has struck me, and one woman that was in our film that I absolutely loved, her name is Colleen Owens, and she worked for the Urban Institute for Policy and Research out in Washington, D.C., and we came out to meet her and talk with her, and she's very big into researching labor trafficking, and especially when it comes to the fashion industry in the United States. And she left her job and ended up going to the Fashion Institute of Technology in New York. And now she's working on how to create fashion that that spreads awareness for labor trafficking and has absolutely no labor trafficking in her supply chain and has people actually being paid fairly. And so I've been thinking about how I would love to connect with her and possibly do a second documentary that was specifically about labor trafficking and how it intersects with the fashion industry.
I'm looking as her photo screen scrolls by on your website. I think that's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
And that's one of the biggest things is I think, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on for sex trafficking victims and with sex trafficking. And I think that's been tackled a lot throughout the years and obviously still needs a mountain of work. But I feel like confident that there's a lot of people working to tackle that in our, and changes are happening and more laws are coming into play for human trafficking victims. But in terms of labor trafficking, I think you just have some sort of a halt there. I think number one, people feel a disconnect to it and it's not as heart-wrenching and sensationalized as like, you know, people getting raped or something like that. That honestly is a part of it. And two, it's because you have to check yourself and think, oh, this Michael Kors bag that I bought that I really love is linked to child slave labor in a different country. And that's why I got it for so cheap, or it was here or there. And it becomes difficult for people to understand how to vote with their wallet and how to buy things. And so I think more effort needs to be focused on how do we create laws to hold businesses accountable? How do we create things so that our average consumer can actually go and easily look up if something's connected to child slave labor? And we have to somehow manage to shift ourselves culturally into being able to recognize that the reason why we don't pay as much for stuff as other countries is because of things like this. And we need to shift that judgment and think, what is more important, that I get this shirt for $5 or I paid $29 and understand that someone was paid adequately? That's actually something that Colleen came and gave a presentation that I went to a few weeks ago, and she looked it up, and it was like for a plain white t-shirt. I can't remember what brand, what company, or where it was coming from. She said plain white t-shirt should cost $29 if someone was actually being paid fairly with fair wages and healthcare and all this other stuff. And to people, that blows their mind. And most people would say, oh, my God, I would never pay $29 for a white shirt. But, I mean, we have to look at these things and come to terms with them. And I think that is going to be the biggest challenge as far as labor trafficking. So much more awareness, in my opinion, needs to start going towards that.
Yes, absolutely. And for those also, I think that we also have to remember, and thank you for sharing that, Laura, but I think that we also have to look at what is the mindset of individuals that are willing to do these kinds of horrible things to other individuals. Mm-hmm. You know, there's this whole really dark part of it, you know, is what has altered someone's perception of another human life and their own life? Because what most people don't realize is that, you know, those that are willing to step aside or look aside from participating in any way with anything that is devaluing another human life, they're also destroying their own spirit. They're also mm-hmm. destroying their own life, you know, no matter what they think they gain, because we're here mm-hmm. as human beings to learn and to grow and to participate for the betterment of humanity. And yeah. So we have to look at the whole picture. The whole picture yep. is so important. So I'm definitely going to get in touch with you about, there's three places right off the bat that I'd love to see if we can get a viewing of Break the Chain. And even though that we're stepping into the holiday season, I think this is a really important time for people to really look at all of these things, because yeah. everyone deserves to be happy. Everyone deserves to be cared for. Everyone deserves to be in a loving environment.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So as your own personal experience, and you so honestly say that you were a victim yourself, how has that helped you to have a different awareness of the challenges of being vulnerable?
I think it's definitely helped me a lot in terms of connecting with other survivors. Mm-hmm. It's not something that's distant that I have to just empathize with and try to understand. It's something that I wholeheartedly understand and get and feel. And I understand how I could find myself in a human trafficking situation just based on the things that had happened with me and in my life that led to sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it allows me to really understand where they're coming from and understand what needs to be shown to the public, because I've experienced the public not understanding my issues and my story in certain ways. And sometimes it's been hard, honestly, to tackle issues like this when they're so close to home, because it just, it triggers you in different ways, and you feel a little bit more, you empathize a little bit more. Someone's telling you their story, and all of a sudden, 3 seconds later, you're starting to remember things in your head about your story. Mm-hmm. And so I had to definitely take it a little bit slower and have breaks in between things that I did.
Well, but there's such an authenticity that you can speak about that is so important. And I do see that you have, so thank you for sharing that with us. And I see that on November 8th, which is this week in Saginaw at Delta College, you're going to be the show will be aired, or the documentary Break the Chain will be aired from 7 to 9. Is there any particular place at Delta College if people would be able to take a look at that? Are you aware of that? And also in Benzonia, which I love Benzonia, on December 6th from 7 to 9, you're going to personally be there at the Benzie Area Zonta Club and Mills Community House, it says.
Yeah. For the Saginaw one, I actually do not know. I just got a message from the Michigan Abolitionist Project, who I believe has a student there that will be screening it. And they just sent a message that said the student will be screening it in a classroom there. And so I was like, okay, can you give me more information? But I haven't heard back. So, so what I recommend is if you want to do that one in Saginaw, then contact the Michigan Abolitionist Project.
Okay. You might want to put that on your website because it's not there, just so that people know. But tell me about, and then in Benzie County. So that's for those who are not familiar with, or Benzonia, excuse me, in Benzie County. For those of you who are not familiar with Michigan, it's in the west, northwest part of the state on Lake Michigan, in the area of Lake Michigan. What brought it there in particular? Because it seems like what we have to remember is remote areas are just as vulnerable as crowded areas.
Yeah, most of the screenings that go on because different people in different areas of the U.S. have contacted us through our screening application system online and said they wanted to bring this film in. That was the Zonta Club of Benzonia, and they contacted us and said they want to do a community awareness event for their community. So a lot of these people are kind of stepping up in different organizations saying, hey, nothing is happening in terms of awareness and education in our community about this. We want to be the leaders in bringing it to our community and starting this discussion. And so I believe that's how it's gotten there. And then, they asked if I would come out and speak with them. And I absolutely loved going to the screenings and being a part of the Q&As and helping people further understand.
Thank you. So we just have about 3 minutes left, Laura. Is there any, what is the best way for people to reach you? Is there any last things that you want to share about what you're doing?
The best way for people to reach me is definitely through the website. If you go through the website, it has my information on there. If you just send an email to breakthechainproject@gmail.com or go through that screening application process, that is definitely the best way. It does have my phone number on there. I like to tell people to contact me. If you are contacting me about the film, that is great. I have since learned that a lot of people, just like anyone that's doing anything that's somehow even in the spotlight in the smallest sense gets, harassment. So I don't like that, but you are feel free to contact me via my phone if you want to set up a screening that way, or talk to me about the film and how you can view it that way as well.
Okay. So we will ask people instead to contact you primarily through your email.
So that primarily to the email, yes.
Okay, breakthechainproject@gmail.com. And please take a look at the website, breakthechainfilm.com. Take a look at the trailer. Take a look at the important work that Laura Swanson has done and her crew, literally on a shoestring, to bring this important information to universities, to healthcare providers, to police and law enforcement, to all of those people, and most importantly to the community, because we have to understand how this is so prevalent. And we might be walking by human trafficking victims as we're in the store or we're driving by them. We just don't even know.
Absolutely.
So I really want to thank you for all that you have been doing and for being willing to to take your time in such an important thing, because if we don't save ourselves, if we don't save our children, then we have nothing. We really have nothing. So I encourage people again to take a look at this. And of course, you're more than welcome, Laura, to to have this podcast, to use this podcast however you would like to. And that's what I always let people know. This can be and is heard all over the world. So that's an important thing to know. So on behalf of myself as a mother and as a grandmother, thank you for all that you have done. Any last things that you'd like to share?
Other than just thank you for letting me also continue to share, you know, things about human trafficking and try and continue that education throughout the world. I really appreciate the opportunity for being on your show. And the last thing that I just want to let people know is that you don't have to be law enforcement. You don't have to be a teacher. You don't have to be in any sort of profession that would make you obviously connected to human trafficking, or your efforts would, you know, obviously relate to helping with human trafficking automatically. No matter what your talent is, no matter what you do, there is some way that you can be involved, even if it's something small, just using your talent, following that legislation, educating yourself on the issue, just talking to your friends about it. Anything like that really goes a long way and helps.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time, for all that you're doing for humanity, Laura. And it's been a pleasure to speak to you. I'm Elaine Grohman. This is Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio. Please remember that you, just like Laura Swanson, can do something to make our world a better place. It is our world. It is our lives, after all. Thank you so much.